So who was that guy, Jeff Buckley? You all know who Jeff Buckley is without knowing who Jeff Buckley is. He is the one that does that version of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah that, like, almost turned the axis of the earth in the opposite direction in its profoundness. I used to live in the East Village, New York City, in Manhattan, and I used to walk by this place called Chenet, and they always had this sign out for a guy named Jeff Buckley. This is before anybody knew who he was. It was just him and a guitar playing there, like, several nights a week. And I just was never around to hear him. And then maybe 4 years later, my best friend Mike sits me in his car at the Deptford Mall in New Jersey, and he's like, I want to play you something. He's like, you ever heard of Jeff Buckley? And in my head, I'm like, the name's familiar. And he played me, you know, just a couple of songs from his album, Grace, that was unbelievable. Not knowing in my head that I had been listening to his dad since I was a teenager, Tim Buckley, who was a big singer in the 60s and 70s. Jeff, you know, after, put it this way, my mom contacted me, was it June of 1997? She's like, one of those guys that you really love just passed away. He, like, drowned in the Mississippi River in Memphis. I'm like, who are you talking about? This is like, the internet was around, but no, only one person I knew had it, and he wasn't, you know, he wasn't around at the moment. So slowly it comes out, yeah, that Jeff had gone down. But I ended up, you know, a couple of years later, starting communication up with his mother, and for a while I was writing for the Jeff Buckley International newsletter. Jeff's just has a way of, his father had that same kind of, he's got a song called Song of the Siren, if you look it up, Tim Buckley, they didn't have the best relationship though, but that, I've got tons of versions of Satisfied Mind, that particular song, but it was all down to two versions. One was Marty Stewart's version, which is country and it's amazing and it's like really upbeat. But then I was like, no, I need to use Jeff's version because I just want it to be all about the words and the passion of the words. And I only have one thing to teach you today. I'm going to look at it from three different angles, but there's really only one thing. And I'm going to start by inviting you to make funny sounds with me. You know, I love toning. The sound that we're going to tone, and I'll show you what I mean by toning, sounds like this. Yaoma, 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 yaoma. It sounds what? Chinese, right? Japanese? Yaoma. It's not. It's Aramaic. And we'll talk about that. But what I mean by toning, I'll give an example. And you can tone exactly like me, rather than like when I tone the Aramaic Lord's Prayer or all these other guided things. I'm not going to really guide you this time. We're just going to maybe spend about a minute just being with this sound. Just keep repeating it. If you want to do it in unison, if you want to be all frou-frou-y and show off and go into harmonies and all that, no beatboxing, Bill. But whatever, for a minute, and then, you know, after a little while, we'll let it kind of unravel. And I never noticed, like, this is the exact same lily I have in my, it's not the same one, but it's, you know, the same type of lily I have in my office right beside my desk, which reminds me of my grandmother, who loved lilies, who I found out about a year ago is not my genetic grandmother. I found out a year ago that my dad was not my dad, but it was actually his best friend. So my name's not even Hoffman, it's Munyon. Wow. We'll continue that at another date. Too much to unpack there. So I'm going to just take a big, beautiful breath in, the gift of breath. Yeah. We can just repeat it. Yeah. One more. Time, one more Yaoma, wide open. Put everything you've got into it wide open, and then allow it to just kind of fall back into the silence, okay? One big Yaoma, big beautiful breath of air. So how do you feel? Anything else? Wow. Dude, connected. Heart feels more open. Do you feel rich?
Like I own the stars.
You know, the people in this room, I can say this to, that most of the world is watching the birdie and looking in completely in not only, I don't want to say a wrong direction, but in a direction that does not even exist. Let me put it this way. In 2022, there was a trio of physicists who won the Nobel Prize. Anybody know what they won the prize for? 2022. They proved that this is not real. That our local experience is not real. Funny, what's real mean? It's a great question on one of my teachers, Joseph Rael, beautiful painted arrow. Technically, his name is Tsl-tikoi. And he's like, are we real? So then my brain goes, what's real? So let's go sideways. What is rich? What does that mean? Say you feel rich. Do you think it's the same to feel rich and think rich? Think and grow rich. I spent decades rereading that book and realizing that there was a massive flaw right in the middle of it, even though I love Napoleon Hill. Think and grow rich, master key to riches. But, you know, there's a great quote, actually, that I was thinking about on the way here, and I'm like, if I put this in, I'm not going to be able to get out of the talk fast enough, so I'm not going to put it in. I'm going to put it in, I'm going to mention it, and then I'm going to go away from it. But, you know, the quote is this. I think it's Matthew 19:23. Easier to get a camel through the eye of a needle than a rich man into heaven. All right. Well, let me first reestablish the base. People ask me questions a lot, whether it's YouTube comments, and either they understand or they're at least open, or it's they know the world, they know everything, and it's crass. And the thing is, most questions I can't answer because I understand that whatever I say, they won't even be able to comprehend what I'm speaking about. Because, and I say this with all the love in my heart, I say it pretty much at every talk, 99.9% of all of the biblical experts, the people that are supposed to be the language experts, the Bible experts, the ones about the history of Christianity, the mega tele evangelist preachers, have virtually zero clue what they're even talking about, because they don't even know what and where their religion came from. But they're sure about what they know. And the problem with that is this sum total of thoughts, this sum total of little digital samples of a much greater truth with a capital T that can't fully be expressed, is being kind of boiled down and hardened into an ideology that becomes a barrier for the transmission of the essence of love and consciousness and eternity that in Christianity Yeshua was trying to communicate in the first place. As a matter of fact, most modern Christianity, it's right there in the Bible, is exactly what he was blowing to pieces and kind of taunting and making fun of and showing that they didn't have a clue what they were talking about. And that's what represents him today. So these people ask these questions. What God are you praying to? Whatever it may be, you know, what's this, what's that? And you can kind of tell whether it's a real question or not. But what's funny is it's all coming from, like I say, these samples, rather than coming from direct, what we would call analog experience. I don't want to go too deep into that. But to just balance that rich man into heaven quote, first of all, just to be clear, there was a guy like 100 plus years ago that made up a story about how, oh, well, the eye of the needle was a gate in the walled city of Jerusalem. And you would have to squat to get down through it, and a camel would have to squat. Well, it's made up. It was actually the wrong word. There's Gamala and there's Gamla. And since things were translated from his spoken Aramaic into written Koine Greek, people don't realize that they didn't have the phonetic markings, the vowel sounds. They had none of that stuff. It was just general basic letters, mostly consonants. So what was that word actually? It wasn't camel. That's kind of grotesque. There's no way you can even think about a camel through the eye of a needle without a lot of blood and a lot of flesh and a lot of mess. I don't care how you're going to do it. But what if I told you the word wasn't camel in Aramaic? What if I told you the word was a braided rope? Is it possible to get a braided rope?
Fiber by fiber.
It's got to be done mindfully and very mindfully through the eye of the needle. So now let's look at that. A braided rope, which is a very common word back then, and that also shows you how they didn't understand even the basic Aramaic, but a braided rope through the eye of a needle. Easier to do that than to get a rich man into heaven. All right, well, what does rich mean? Well, there's really three different words for rich in Aramaic. Two mean rich in the sense of we think rich. What does that mean? We'll get back to it. The third one actually means whole or complete. Or, essentially, you could say fully flowering. Like people talk all the time, oh, you know, this is going on in my life. This is going on. I haven't figured this out yet. It's like you're not done yet. Or as Jimmy, you know, and I've quoted this one before, as Jimmy Buffett says, you know, the cosmic baker took us out of the oven just a little too early and we're just a bunch of half-baked fruitcakes. We're not done yet. And he also says there's a thin line between Saturday night and Sunday morning. Funny, you think about that and you feel it out. All right, let's go back to that. What does rich mean? What does rich mean? What do we usually think rich means? Stuff, right? Who was it that Yeshua was always holding up as an example? The kind of person. Who is it that he was holding up that the modern church, you know, most in the modern church, I'll put it that way, don't ever talk about? Well, the Samaritan takes me in a whole different line of thinking, because people today don't even know what a Samaritan is, but I don't mean you, Rhonda. I'm just saying, so I'm not even going to talk about that. I'm just saying the poor. Yeah, poverty, poor. So what does poor mean? What about poor versus rich? You got a lot of stuff, you don't have a lot of stuff. Interesting. What's that first beatitude in the Aramaic? Poor in spirit. Well, what's funny is that's not a proper translation. It's not exactly wrong, poor in spirit. What is spirit, though? What does the word spiritus in Latin mean? What does it mean? What does spirit mean?
Essence.
Breath. Spirit means breath. Why did we forget that? In Aramaic, there is no such word as spirit, even though people will translate it as spirit. The word's ruha. It's, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because I do a lot, but spirit, you could say, you know, that intangible breath, heartbeat, wind, air, etc. What I'm saying is we totally and completely lost that, but my focus isn't on that. Let's just keep it at poor in spirit. Poor, in terms of, let me explain that to you, what it actually meant in Aramaic, that word maskin, okay, as opposed to miskin, which means poor. Let's say that I have $1,000 in my wallet, and rather than someone who has nothing in their wallet, I have $1,000, and I take it out, and I put it in my front pocket. The wallet is now what? Empty. That is what the first beatitude meant. Blessed are the empty or open in spirit, breath, whatever. You get what I'm saying? So when Yeshua was talking so much about the poor, he wasn't talking about people that didn't have possessions. He was talking about people that were empty, open. So let me throw a quote out from you, or from you. Give me a quote, and I'll throw it out, and we'll talk about it now. Sufficient unto the what? The morrow shall take care of itself, sufficient unto the day or the evils thereof. Well, let me tell you something. There's no word for day in Aramaic. And I'll go toe-to-toe with any scholar on the planet about that. That if you write the word day on the paper, you're making an assumption that you can't back up. Because that word sounds like this, yauma. Yauma. And what it means is simply a moment. A moment in time. That's a day, a week, a month, a year. In that year, back in the day. Are you talking about an exact day? No. It's a moment in time. More specifically, in this phrase, yauma, or what's in the Lord's Prayer, yaumana, intriguingly, means now. Sufficient unto now are the evils thereof. Well, what does evil mean? I know this is a few pieces of information. What does evil mean? Evil in Aramaic, this word's bishte. The word's bisha. Bisha. What does that mean? It means not fertile. Not fertile. Huh? Some people would say rotten. Not true. That's part of it. It means a stone green banana or a banana that's oily and oozing, although people would eat those too, past the point of ripeness or too early. People say good and evil. There's no such thing as good and evil. There's good, which is the word tuv, which doesn't mean good. It could mean goodness, but that's not the same thing. What it means is ripe. There's ripe and unripe. Not good and bad. Ripe is when we are awake and open and empty now. Remember that feeling? If I had just walked up here and started talking, we didn't do any toning, and I just started talking, and you were worrying about your rent you still haven't paid or the car that just broke down, and I said, do you feel rich? Most of you would have gone, no, probably not, if you were honest. However, if I could first help bring you into now, into this present moment, in the East, that's called Zen, Zazen. Before Zazen, chop wood, carry water. After Zazen, after enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. It's not about what you're doing. It is never about what you're thinking. It's always about your perception, and is your perception open? If there's anything I know after four decades of study in my field, it's that I don't have a clue. But yet most of the other people that I know, not all of them, there's some amazing ones out there, and I can start naming them, you know, who are able to say the same thing. I don't really have a clue. But yet somehow we listen to the ones that have it all figured out. Do you have everything figured out? So sufficient unto now are the unripe, what? What do we call that stuff? We call it thought. So not necessarily a bad thing. But, and I'm going to throw another quote out. A man is rich in proportion. It's incredibly hot in here. A man, I always do that. Let me rephrase what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, you know, the temperature's hot just because stuff's burning up. At least it is for me. A man is rich in proportion to the number of things which he can afford to let alone. A man is rich in proportion to the number of things which he can afford to let alone. That's Thoreau. That's from Walden, which I'm reading for the 30-somethingth time right now. I don't know how many times I've read it, but. Funny, when I was younger, I thought that just meant less possessions. I'm older now. I'm 54. And funny that I'm starting to recognize that that can go so much deeper. Literally down to the point of him sitting in a cabin for 2 years and just sitting and being. And realizing that what he was probably speaking of more so is now. And it's funny, like, how hard that is for people. Like, people come up to me, they'll be like, what's the key? I'm like, I gave you the key. Oh, which one? I'm like, I gave you a lot of keys, but what's the one thing I said, if you forget everything else, just remember this. They're like, oh, I don't remember. It's like, okay, it was this. Take a deep breath in your nose, out your mouth. That spirit, that's breath. It's the key to something called heaven. Where's heaven? It's now. It doesn't have a locale. Location. Our little 3-year-old's talking like that. Can I have some milk? Or some water? And I'm like, where is this coming from? We don't watch, you know, Gone with the Wind on a regular basis or anything. Miss Scarlett, you get in here. You catch your death of damnness. I mean, we don't, you know, but she's talking like this little, she's not quite that full-blown with it. But so pulling this all together, though, heaven, why would he talk about the poor? Because they were open. They were empty. But what do we think we need to do? We think we need to not only crowd our space, but to crowd our head. So what I say to people, they're like, okay, here's the key. They say, give me one key, okay? And I've done this in front of, I remember doing this in Texas, in Dallas. Like when I was out on the road a lot, I'd be speaking to like 500 people. And I'd be like, I'm going to give you my cell phone. But you don't have permission to call unless you do this one thing. What's that? I want you to go into a room with no incense, no candles, no kind of ambiance of any kind, music, nothing. And I want you to sit in a chair for 1 hour. And do what? I want you to sit in a chair for 1 hour. But what do you want us to do? I want you to... It's the ego going, I'm scared. I just did it. He's done it before too. He does it too. So, but it's terror. But what's funny is, what is that? What is that really? It's being able to, we're terrified of being wholly, fully present in this moment in many cases. because we feel like we're not done yet. Like we're not finished. We haven't figured it out. I haven't figured the God thing out. I haven't figured the rich thing out. I haven't figured out that whole verbudi sacred ash from the hand thing or dropping golden watches like Sai Baba. But in the end, here's the thing that's really funny about it all. It's not real anyway. It's not real anyway. The only thing that's real is now. Tomorrow shall take care of itself. As a matter of fact, let me give it to you specifically in Aramaic. So, lalakhil tespun damkar. Take no interest in tomorrow. Hugir makar yasep, for tomorrow will take care of itself. Sapek le'yama bishte. Sufficient unto this moment is its evil. Have you ever met tomorrow? Think about that. And I throw this out too. Anybody feel like an awakening, a quickening? Doesn't necessarily feel good all the time. Things are going faster. Like last year was the fastest year of your life. NASA started saying back in 2017 that time and space were speeding up, but they had no instrumentation that could effectively and efficiently get outside of the E equals MC squared continuum well enough to be able to prove that. Because all the equipment, even their Higgs boson colliders, can get like little glimpses, but can't do it well enough to prove that it's true. One of the other things that they talk about is equidistant expansion, kind of like Big Bang. Funny, like we love the Big Bang idea, but like Alan Watts said, it was probably more like a wiggle or a giggle. Men love that. But science is starting to show that it probably was nothing like that. Equidistant expansion means that as everything is in this expansion, locked into this time-space continuum, that since this is expanding at exactly the same rate I am, I can't tell that we're going through this massive expansion. Exactly. But I can feel it. There's also the expansionary constant, which is, you know, I know I'm going out on a limb here, and Don will correct me after the service, but, you know, essentially that we have that energy is there, can't be created, can't be destroyed, and we're going to feel it whether we can perceive it or not. And it's a fun thing how we dig out looking for this luxurious life. Don's been out at our place since we moved here, it's been almost a year. July 1st of last year, crazy, that we moved about 20 minutes north to Cowie. And it's like, you know, you get up to our driveway, up in front of the what's that thing called? Oh, a garage, Dale. That elusive thing called a garage. And the first thing everybody does is they turn left and they go, because of this view. And it's funny, like I've got this keen knowing that, you know, I was out there in like a heal the world mode for a very long time, when what I really needed to be doing, it's not about what I'm doing that's right or wrong in that sense, but was I really completely conscious in it? Was I really present in the moment with it? Was I really able to realize that it was all about that now presence, that heaven, which is how we bring heaven to earth, create heaven on earth, by being conscious in the moment? Was I really paying attention, is what I boil it down to now. Are you really paying attention? How do you pay attention? Well, you pay attention, but this is a great help. the man is rich in proportion, not just the number of stuff he can let alone, but also even in thoughts. Can you actually sit in a room for an hour? Can you sit beside a stream? It's a little easier. And just be there and not have to entertain all of your thoughts about having to be somewhere else. Well, to having to have a radio in order to really love this experience. Having, oh, my cell phone. I didn't get into my cell phone at all. Oh, it's filming, so it's okay then. Get what I'm saying? Yeah, the whole thing. Why should I compute when that thing computes? So I just want to leave you with a couple of words that you've already heard today. These words are from Joe Hayes, and Jack Rhodes helped him finish it. Joe Red Hayes. But I want to talk about just to hit this idea of what's talked about in here. Satisfied. What does that mean? What does it mean to be satisfied? What's that? Content. What is content? Rephrase the syllabus in there. Content. We seek content when, at least we think we seek content, what we're really seeking is content. We're looking for now, but yet we go out on this race across the world piling. You ever been into a wealthy person's home? Very, 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 very. What is not there? Clutter, stuff. You ever been into someone who is, in their mind, poor? What's everywhere? Stuff. So I just want to read this to you. You've heard it. How many times have you heard someone say, if I had money, I would do things my way? But little they know that it's so hard to find one rich man in 10 with a satisfied mind. Money can't buy back all your youth when you're old. Older. I put the ER on the end, and once I... A friend when you're lonely, or peace to your soul. The wealthiest person is a pauper at times, compared to the man with the satisfied mind. But I'll leave you with this one quote. It's Les Brown, my original speaking hero. The reason I wanted to start speaking was because of Les, and I got to tell him that in Canada once, like 10 years ago, crying all over each other. But he's quoting Yeshua. Well, he's actually not quoting Yeshua. He's quoting Paul. And I'm not going to tell you what the word means, but all I'm going to tell you is it doesn't really mean money in Aramaic, just money. We don't have time for that. But Les says, money may be the root of all evil, but everybody wants to find out for themselves. So have fun anyway. Forget everything I said. But remember, if you're looking for anything other than now, you're creating a stress in your life that has a name. It's called Satana, a being divided against itself. You're creating a stress in your life, and you're suffering. But suffering is always in 100% direct proportion to your resistance. What is your resistance? Your resistance to now. Okay, bye. Thank you.